T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Good morning and welcome to 95.7 The Game alongside Dan Dibley. I'm Joe Fortenbaugh. Thank you for joining us this morning. We hope you had an awesome weekend. In just a moment, we're going to give away $1,000. We'll do it again at 8 o'clock. We've got Bay Bridge Series tickets to tomorrow night's game to give away at 7:20 and at 8:20. Lo Neal is out. He's up in Napa. He's going to be covering Raiders training camp from 12 to 3 today with Pop and Bonte, but he will join us on this program at 8:30. Because he's out, well, we needed to go to the heavy hitters. We brought in not one, but two replacements. We will introduce them in just a minute, but for right now, here's Dibs with your update.
Deadline day, Joe, around Major League Baseball at 1 o'clock today. The non-waiver trade deadline will hit. All eyes on Sonny Gray ahead of that deadline. The Yankees reportedly close to potentially finding a suitable package to acquire Sonny Gray from Oakland. He is expected to start tonight in Game 1 of the Bay Bridge Series. Stay tuned to 95.7 The Game for all the developments and the breaking news surrounding trade deadline and Sonny Gray's future in Oakland. The A's with a walk-off win over the Twins, 6-5. Yonder Alonso with the home run in the 12th to win it. The Dugout Show tonight, 6:15. First pitch, 7:05. Giants and A's here on 95.7 The Game. The Giants coming in without much momentum.
Good ball game. High block, pitched straight. So did Rich Hill. And in the end, it was Kenley Jansen who strikes out Jay Wan to end the ball game with the tying run at second base.
Dwayne Kuiper, the call, NBC Sports Bay Area. The Dodgers win it 3-2. Story number 3, Raiders camp continuing without Donald Penn as he holds out for a new contract. The team hoping for a quick resolution. EJ Manuel and Connor Cook battling for the backup quarterback spot. We are live from training camp today, noon to 3, with Greg Papa and the Greg Papa Show, along with Bonte Hill and our very own Lorenzo Neal. That's your update. I'm Dan Dibley on your home of the NBA champion Golden State Warriors. It's 95.7 The Game.
Good stuff, Dibs. Dave Duncan, 4-time World Series champ, is going to join us at 7:30 to talk Bay Bridge Series and MLB trade deadline. Ken Korak, who was in Cooperstown for the Hall of Fame induction ceremony of one Bill King over the weekend, he's going to join us to talk about that, Bay Bridge Series, the trade deadline, and more at 7:45. Bay Bridge Series, Game 2 tickets for tomorrow night. We're giving them away in 17 minutes at 7:20. But it's Dibs, it's Joe, and with Lo Neal out, we went to the bench, found one of our all-time great six men, Darryl the Guru Johnson. Guru, how you feeling? You have a nice weekend?
Yeah, I did. I'm fired up. I'm excited about this trade deadline. Football is in the air, and there will be no Thursday moving forward, fellas, without football, so that has me excited.
Quite a few hot takes from you in the first hour. We'll see how much is left in the tank. I hope you didn't leave it all on the field in the opening series.
No, I still got a lot.
All right, I'm looking forward to that. Now, before we get to our next guest, it's time for the 4K a day cash contest. Here's your chance to win $1,000. Text the code word HAND to 72881. HAND, as in Hand of the King, to 72881. Message and data rates apply. Freaking Chubbs, like, ruined Game of Thrones for us last night. Just ruined it. All his crying and diaper changing and spit up.
He's a
Moving
baby.
Forward, he's going to get shut down from 6 to 7 every Sunday night. There's going to be an absolute shutdown in effect. Now, no more on that. But outside of the Guru, the Butcher Boy joining us in studio this morning. Joe Shasky, how you feeling,
man? I'm doing great. I'm so fired up. You know, just trying to get in where I fit in, Barry.
You just knocked out your first hour with us. How'd you feel? How'd the 6 hour go for you?
It was clammy. You know, I was sweating.
Clammy.
But I'm feeling good. I'm feeling myself. Yeah, I'm starting to get in the zone. Guru and Dan and yourself, we're having a good time today.
We're definitely having a good time, and it is the MLB trade deadline. We will keep you covered on everything taking place around Major League Baseball before the 1 p.m. trade deadline. Keep it with us here at 95.7 The Game. Now, we'll get back into baseball in just a second, but big story over the weekend. We talked about the Ravens and Colin Kaepernick last week. Didn't look like anything was going to go down. But according to reports, things are heating back up. Owner Steve Bisciotti said Sunday that the team is still deciding whether to sign, quote, controversial quarterback Colin Kaepernick. Quote, we're very sensitive to it and we're monitoring it and we're still, as General Manager Ozzie Newsome says, we're scrimmaging it. We're trying to figure out what's the right tact. Pray for us. I think that's Bisciotti just having some fun with the media there. But the bottom line is, this isn't about what he can do on the field. I think this is more confirmation outside of what we heard from Giants owner John Mara months ago. It's about what it's going to do to your sponsors, your sales, your ticket prices. That's literally who the Ravens are contacting. They're contacting all of their sponsors to see if they sign Colin Kaepernick, what are their sponsors going to do? Butcher Boy is the guest of the program. We'll throw to you first. Does it amaze you to this extent that this is where we are? That there's a team that clearly likes the guy from an on-field perspective, but now they have to call their own sponsors to see whether or not it's going to make sense for them?
I'm just blown away by the whole Kaepernick saga. I thought this guy was going to go to the Hall of Fame. His first season, he came onto the scene. I've seen every pass this guy has taken, every snap that he's taken. And I'm just blown away that this guy is on the sidelines, not getting picked up. And yet Blaine Gabbert, who he replaced, who was the worst quarterback I've seen since Jim Druckenmiller, had got picked up by the Arizona Cardinals, and Kaepernick can't even get a sniff. At this point, let's just call it what it is. I mean, no one wants to touch Kaepernick for many, many, many reasons. And it's just kind of disgusting. It really is. And as a 49er fan, I understand why they have decided to move on. And Kaepernick deserved to move on. But somebody step up and sign the guy. I mean, he can help your team win. He's a good player. Don't give me this. He's a system guy. What system does Blaine Gabbert work in? None.
It's a great question. And a great answer, none, because that's accurate. He doesn't work in any system, not even at the University of Missouri. Guru, here we are once again, talking about the latest in the Colin Kaepernick saga. It looks as if the Baltimore Ravens have had the meeting where they've said to themselves, from an on-field perspective, we like the guy. Because now they've taken that next step. They're calling sponsors. They're putting in all this due diligence to make sure that if they do sign him, it's not going to cost them money. It's not going to offend their fan base. This is amazing because I highly doubt the Philadelphia Eagles put this much in to signing Michael Vick years ago.
Yeah, Joe, I'm going to shock you guys. I'm black, and I'm trying
that is
to
shocking. No way.
I'm trying to look at this very objectively, but I just have to look at this whole Kaepernick thing through the lenses of a black man. And the fact that the Ravens are even contemplating bringing on Kaepernick, they're already one of my favorite organizations. We all know this is about race. And I'm not saying I agree with Cap, whether right or wrong. I just know why he's without a job right now. And it bothers me. It bothers me. It really does bother me. So the fact that they're interviewing, you know, the season ticket holders, the people you list, I'm actually fired up and hope Cap gets a job because I know his intentions and what he was trying to shed light on, there was a mix-up. He needed help. He needed a team that could actually help him do it a different way. But right now, the fact that we're going through this circus again, and it's almost like he's OJ in the trial. He's getting close. Is the baby here? Is he gonna get a job? Oh, no, they decided against it. We saw him go to Seattle. That didn't work out when all reports were he was going to get signed. So I'm hoping like hell the Ravens can just be that team that said, you know what? We heard the noise. It's not popular. We like the guy. And John Harbaugh going out front. Oh, we're buddies. We talk all the time. I think he's almost backing himself into a corner to where he's going to catch hell if Cap doesn't get signed.
How are we at a point where signing a guy who stands up for the Black Lives Matter movement is considered more of a threat to your bottom line than, say, this cover-up on the concussions, the CTE stuff that the NFL's been trying to say for years, like big tobacco? Oh, football doesn't cause brain damage. Cigarettes don't cause cancer. No sponsors are pulling out because of that. No one's worried about their bottom line on that scandal, the fact that you're handing out brain damage on a weekly basis. But here's an African-American who decides that he wants to stand up for the Black Lives Matter movement, and now the NFL's like, this is going to cost us money. There's a black guy standing up for black people. This could cost us a lot of money. We need to put research in. How bizarre is that to you? Really? Are people going to stop watching the NFL because of this?
I don't think so, but I think there's two major things at play. The one thing about the concussions is that's not going to ever really affect you. If a player today has concussion problems, it's not going to rear its head until long after he's done playing. So that no longer affects your team, your product, and fans, I think, can get separation from that. It's sad. Nobody wants to see it, but it's like, oh, what a player he was. You know, those 12 years were magical. And the other thing is, this protest hits everyone, whether or not you are racist. If you have this idea of patriotism and he's kneeling and you take offense to that, you're going to always carry that with you. And there's a big fear among ownership and franchises that fans will turn away because of that. But I agree with you, Joe. And you look at that study that Darren Revelle was perpetrating, that he misconstrued the numbers on how many people really turned off. It's a very small number of people, I think, who were both turned off by the protest and turned off the TV.
And that's part of the problem. People are so uninformed on this topic. Revelle released a study last week. It was done. We'll get the information on the company that conducted this study. But we talked about this last year. At the beginning of the season, NFL ratings were down, and everyone was throwing out their reason why. Part of it was the election and Trump, and that was a major topic in America, right? Baseball ratings were down. Basketball ratings were down. Everyone thought that was the situation. And you see it across all mediums. News is through the roof these days because of what's happening. The news, every day, there's something major breaking. This study came back and said Kaepernick's protest was the main reason why the ratings had dropped. Now, that's a sensational headline. So people grab this and they run wild with it. Deadspin did a great job of going into the numbers and saying Revelle and the headline writers are perpetrating what's essentially a false narrative, in that they took maybe 2,000 people, and of the 2,000 people they surveyed, there were like 12% that said they watched less NFL football this year than normal. So a very small portion of the sample size was actually watching fewer games. Of that small portion saying they were watching fewer games, like a quarter of those people came out and said that it was because of the anthem protest. So they give you this sensational headline, Kaepernick's protest is main reason ratings are down. No, it was like a handful of people out of 2,000 or 7,000. It's a handful. Do you have the number in front of you?
Yeah, I do, Joe. It was 12% of 9,200 people they surveyed. Only 12% said they viewed fewer games. So that's basically about 1,000 of the 9,200.
Okay.
Of those 1,000 people, 26% said it was because of Kaepernick. So of the nearly 10,000 people surveyed, about 200 of them said it was because Kaepernick, or about 3% of the total.
Yes, and this garbage gets out there, and then people clamor and they cling to the headline, and then they push that narrative. There are a lot of people that don't want to see the guy get signed because they think he's anti-American. He's not anti-American. He made a mistake with the way he went about the protest by sitting, and then he changed it to a kneel. But a lot of people globbed onto the fact that this was such an anti-American case, Butcher Boy, that that's kind of how they're worried about selling it now. The Ravens are sitting there. We could lose sponsors because we're signing an anti-American. At what point did the guy say he was anti-America?
I don't know. I'm kind of over this Kaepernick story. Just somebody pick him up. I mean, as a Niner fan, we've been listening about Kaepernick and this whole saga ad nauseum for 2 years. It's just, enough is enough. Someone pick the guy up. Let him play football. The guy can contribute. He can help some team. The Jets, the Jaguars, the Browns. Someone can use this guy. He can win you some games. And in the right system, with the right playmakers around him, the guy has proven that he can get to the playoffs. There are so many. Austin Davis getting signed before Colin Kaepernick. Are you kidding me? Dan Orlovsky off the streets. I mean, what's next? A high school player from St. Ignatius getting signed by the Raiders to back up? I mean, at some point, let's just call it what it is. And I'm glad Guru brought that up, because it is disgusting. And as somebody that's born and raised in the Bay Area, maybe we're insulated from the rest of the country, but I just don't understand all the hoopla. Someone pick him up.
Is he better than Robert Griffin III?
Yeah, yes, he is.
And go ahead. You had something else you wanted to say.
No, the sad part about Cap is it's not the Black Lives Matter. It's the timing. It's the fact that people have fought and lost their lives in this country, and you choose to take the focus off of the national anthem, which is to remember the people that had given up their lives for this country. If he would have just went to the organizations and said, hey, you know, I'm really into this Black Lives Matter. We saw Dr. Martin Luther King, you know, people tolerated him. My point is Cap could have got some help from the team that he played football on to shed some light on the Black Lives Matter. It's about the timing. He picked the worst possible time to take away from people that have died for this country. And that's why I think him, his agent, they are all wrong and he's getting the wrong advice. So now you've built that, you've made that bed. And now you got a lie in it. And this is where we're at. But I just feel like, it almost feels, who am I to feel sorry for Cap? Like, dude, your focus and intentions are right. But when you're taken away from the national anthem, people are thinking you're dissing their loved ones that are no longer here. And that's not what you were trying to do. You were trying to preach peace, Gandhi, peace. But you did it the wrong way, and I just feel bad for him because there's no coming back.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because how else would you have liked to see him do it? So many people had this argument a year ago at this time. It's okay for him to protest, just not during the anthem. It's okay for him to protest, just not during the NFL. Well, when are you going to protest? On Instagram? Is that going to be your big protest, an Instagram post, a tweet? The whole point of it is you're trying to disrupt the system. You feel that there's a problem with the system. An Instagram post, a tweet, a little speech on a Friday night in front of 100 people, that's not going to do anything. If you want to get the message out, you've got to be a disruptor. You've got to disrupt the system. That's why he chose that approach. I think a lot of people got focused on how the message was being conveyed rather than the message in general, and that's why you've led to so much miscommunication through this whole process. So many people are on so many different sides of this thing. It's really just one issue, but it ended up steamrolling into this just ball of controversy.
Well, he also kind of scattershotted, I think, unnecessarily with the piggy socks, for example. When you start doing that and you start disparaging police officers across the country whom you've never met, when you're dealing with 0.0005% of them who are, quote, bad cops or whatever the number is, when you start to do stuff like that, I think the message starts to fall on deaf ears, where it's one thing to focus on the anthem and the protest. That's great. You're calling attention to that cause, and then you start going outside of your bounds and taking shots, verbal shots. I think that's where he lost his message a lot.
Bay Bridge Series tickets to give away in just a few moments for Game 2 tomorrow night. We'll also give them away at 8:20. We got $1,000 to give away at 8 o'clock. Thank you for joining us this morning alongside Dan Dibley, Daryl the Guru Johnson, and Butcher Boy. I'm Joe Fortenball. This is 95.7 The Game. While there's controversy surrounding Cap, you know where there's virtually no controversy right now? Santa Clara. San Francisco 49ers open up training camp. The first for John Lynch, the first for Kyle Shanahan, the first with Brian Hoyer as QB. Just nice and quiet. You read the reports. Oh, the D-line's looking competitive. Oh, Reuben Foster, first-round linebacker, had a nice weekend. Butcher Boy, a pleasant departure from previous years. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think the highlight of the weekend was Jed running uphill. I don't know if you guys caught that. But to me, that was like the highlight of the weekend. No, but in all seriousness, it's so refreshing. They've got a young, new head coach who we all remember as dad. We're all endearing to his father as the offensive coordinator of the 49ers, one of the most potent offenses ever, the 94 Niners. And then you got John Lynch, who obviously Stanford guy, has the Bill Walsh ties. Everything they've done, whether it's through the draft, the free agency, it just seems like they're headed in the right direction. And I cannot tell you, everywhere I go, the optimism that I'm seeing from 49er fans, it's a little delusional. I'm here in 8-8. I'm here in 7-9. I say, well, you know, pump the brakes a little. This team won two games. They have no playmakers. This defense can't stop the run. But I got to say, this thing is really positive, and I'm excited. And for the first time in a long time, as a diehard Niner fan, you can kind of stick your chest out and say, hey, I think we got something good going here. And that's a good step.
And you know how they're doing it? Marketing. Look at the message. Look at the message that we've seen over the last few days. If you've listened to any of Kyle Shanahan's pressers, do you see how forthcoming he is when he's talking about his offense and the scheme and what they're trying to do? There are a lot of coaches that never want to get in that. They want to give you very cliche, very boring, very uninspiring answers, and they want to move on. They don't want to give you the details. Shanahan's got enough confidence where it's like, here's what we do. Good luck trying to stop it. Maybe you will, maybe you won't, but I've got no problem answering your questions. He comes across as very likable on stage. Who didn't come across as likable on stage? Chip Kelly. who came across as awkward on stage? Jim Tomsula. Uh-huh. So now you've got a head coach who just gives you the illusion, at the very least, that he's in control. At the very least, you have confidence that this guy knows what he's doing. You cast a weary eye on Chip Kelly because you knew what happened in Philly and you thought maybe he was a gimmick. You knew Tomsula was in over his head. This guy, he gives you confidence. What about John Lynch? You go from a general manager in Trent Baalke who wouldn't say anything. It was leak central. One minute you got Vance McDonald getting this deal done. The next minute you got this done. The next minute there's a leak. You never heard from the guy. It was just bizarre. And then you got John Lynch who, the 49ers in training camp, they rotate practice fields, right? They have multiple practice fields they rotate. Well, sometimes they get to this one in the back corner where the fans who show up are sitting in bleachers. They can't see anything. It's too far away. Lynch comes over to the stands and invites all of them on the field to walk over with him so they can line the sidelines and get a better view. On the surface, maybe not a grand gesture, but a smart gesture. It's kind of a message to everyone. Look, we want to be a little bit more fan friendly. We do pay attention to what you think. We do pay attention to whether or not you are happy with the product. Here, come on down to the field. You just get this sense around the team that they're more likable, that it's more organized, that they've kind of got this thing at the very least moving in the right direction after hitting a reset button. Does it sound like I'm getting too far ahead of myself?
No, and it makes perfect sense for them to do that. And the fact that Jed York is out there running the hill shows you that for the first time in years now that ownership feels comfortable with the general manager structure, who feels good about the coach. Because when Harbaugh was there, Jed York famously was persona non grata in his own organization. And that's not going to be successful in the long term when you've got people who aren't on the same page. I always look at the Warriors template for success, and you look at the ownership through the management structure, through the coach and the players. Everyone gets along. Everyone's on the same page. And if it means moving fans from a bleacher that they can't see anything at and putting them on the sideline, that's the kind of positive PR that'll permeate through the community and help this rebuild from a two-win disaster.
Here's head coach Kyle Shanahan over the weekend on first-round pick Reuben Foster.
You know, you didn't see him much do it. I mean, you didn't see him do it much because he always has the mic, but, you know, it was never a worry of ours. He, you know, both of those spots are pretty interchangeable. It's a little bit different when you get him on the line of scrimmage, which is our Sam linebacker. But Reuben's a football player. He likes to run and hit. If you heard him in the meetings, he understands football very well, and I think he could adjust and play just about anywhere.
Dibs, to your point on Jed York, be the guy out there having fun. Be the guy smiling. Be the guy talking to the media when they ask. Do not be the guy trying to step in on scheme, on personnel, on anything like that. Just be the cool owner who hangs to the side, right? Don't get mixed up in this. Learn from the mistake with the Harbaugh administration. People can like you. You can turn this thing around. You're really not an evil guy. It's doable, but you've got to keep doing more of what you're doing now and less of what we saw in the past.
Be more like your uncle and less like your parents. And that's, I mean, maybe too blunt, but
fair.
When John was running the show and Denise, it was a disaster, and Jed has followed in that pattern. But I give him credit because he's shown an ability to learn and change and adapt, and I think you're seeing it now with John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan.
Let's give away some tickets, two of them, in fact, to tomorrow night's game between the San Francisco Giants and the Oakland A's over at the Coliseum. Coliseum. What is it? Cauliflower? Coliseum. Get organized for it. All right. Tuesday night, first pitch is going to be 7:05. Caller 28, as in 28 home runs for Chris Davis so far this season. Caller 28, 888-957-9570. Caller 28, 888-957-9570. You're winning the tickets to tomorrow night's game. We've got more to give away at 8:20. We've got $1,000 to give away at 8. And we've got a conversation with Dave Duncan, four-time World Series champion, about the trade deadline and the Bay Bridge Series coming up next. Joe, Dibs, Guru, and the Butcher Boy, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Joe, Lowe, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Here's the latest from Ken Rosenthal. A source confirms Addison Reed has been traded to the Boston Red Sox for three prospects. It's currently pending a medical review. More on the trade deadline throughout today's show as we approach the 1 p.m. deadline. It's Joe Fortenbaugh, Dan Dibley, Daryl the Guru Johnson, and the Butcher Boy. We've got you covered up until 10 a.m. Lo Neal is at training camp in Napa. He will be checking in at 8:30. Just a reminder, we've got $1,000 to give away at 8 o'clock and Bay Bridge Series tickets to tomorrow night's game to give away at 8:20. We go to the phones and we welcome in a four-time World Series champion, former pitching coach for the Oakland Athletics and St. Louis Cardinals, now a pitching consultant for the Arizona Diamondbacks, Dave Duncan with Joe Dibbs, Guru and the Butcher Boy on 95.7 The Game. Dave, good morning. Thank you for your time. How are you?
I'm great. It's good to be with you guys.
It's great to have you in. Arizona Diamondbacks having a heck of a turnaround this season. What's been the key from the struggles last year to the transition this season that has the team in contention for a wild card spot?
I think experience. You know, they still are a very young team, but last year they were really young last year, and I think it just takes time for pitchers and hitters both to learn what it takes to be successful at the major league level, and it's a process you just have to go through. And when your entire team is young, that compounds the problems that youth creates. But they're getting experience now, and you're seeing them play better baseball. Right now they're in a little bit of a funk, but they're still their pitching is developing, and they're going to have really good pitching and in the years to come. And offensively, they've got some real talented players.
When you get into the postseason, which is more difficult for the adjustment? Is it harder for pitchers to adjust to postseason baseball, or will it be tougher for the young hitters to do that?
I think it's the hitters that have to make the biggest adjustment, because you don't get the postseason play unless you have really good pitching. So the hitters are going to be facing good pitching up and down, game, you know, from the starter to the relievers, and the relievers become even more of a factor in postseason play. And the hitters, they have their work cut out for them.
Dave, years ago, we used to see pitchers go deep in games. There wasn't a big deal about pitch counts. Now, all of a sudden, you know, pitchers aren't going that deep in games, but yet we're seeing a bunch of Tommy John injuries. If I were to ask you, why do you think that is, how would you answer that?
I don't think anybody has the exact answer to that, but I think that you have guys that are throwing a lot harder, which puts a lot more stress on the elbow, and you know, that's a premium now, is that guy that throws in the high 90s. And when you look at everybody's pitching staff, everybody has three or four guys that are 95 to 100 miles an hour. I think that results in a little bit more damage done to the elbow.
Dave Duncan, four-time World Series champion, pitching consultant for the Arizona Diamondbacks, joining Joe Dibbs, Guru and the Butcher Boy, on 95.7 The Game. Bay Bridge Series 2017 edition kicks off tonight in Oakland. But before we get to that, we've got the trade deadline coming up at 1 p.m. today, and the big name as it pertains to the Bay Area, pitcher Sonny Gray. Now, whether or not he's on the move is one story, but how do you evaluate a pitcher like Sonny Gray? Do you see him as a frontline ace?
Well, I'll try to be totally honest with you. I don't think Sonny Gray is what he was at one particular time, but he's still a really effective pitcher. I don't think you can look at Sonny Gray as the kind of guy that is going to go deep into the game on a consistent basis, but he's going to give you quality starts on a consistent basis for 5-6 innings. And I think that a team competing for a championship, to add a guy with his experience and his ability to get you into that 6th and 7th inning, he would definitely be a plus for a club that has a good pitching staff that doesn't depend on him coming in and carrying a huge load.
And that's kind of where the Dodgers sit at this point, with Clayton Kershaw having the questions about his back and other rotation questions surrounding injury. Do you expect the Dodgers to be a team maybe going after Sonny Gray, or perhaps Yu Darvish would be a candidate?
I think the Dodgers are looking at anything that they feel like could add depth to their pitching. They have finances to do just about anything they want to do, and I'm sure that they're looking out there and evaluating what's available and what it costs to get a player that fits their demands. You know, I mean, right now, I think that's the area where they feel like that they could improve their club, is add a real quality pitcher, starting pitcher to their staff.
Now, with the wild card, there are a lot of teams that think they're in contention, and normally, you know, they would be out of contention. Are you a big proponent of the wild card?
I like the wild card. I think it adds another dimension to the playoffs, and it's kind of exciting. I think the thing of it is when you're a club that has a chance to be the wild card team, though, and you're kind of in a position where you're going to sacrifice some real quality minor leaguers to add that one player that you think can make a difference. You have to think along the lines of, can we go to the World Series if we add this guy? Do we have a chance? Is our club good enough to compete and have a chance to win a World Series by adding this player? It can't just be, do we get to the playoffs? It's got to be more than that if you're going to sacrifice two or three quality minor league players to add, if you're looking at a wild card spot, because that wild card, it's tough. It's tough to go deep into the playoffs if you're a wild card team. I mean, you gotta have something going for yourself.
Dave Duncan, four-time World Series champ, pitching consultant for the Arizona Diamondbacks with Joe Dibbs, Guru, and Butcher Boy on 95.7 The Game. You were the pitching coach for the Oakland A's back in the day. The Bay Bridge Series gets started tonight. Now, both teams struggling this season, not exactly a banner year for either club, but what's this going to mean inside the clubhouse to each of these two teams? It's an inner, I guess, should we say, area rivalry. You've got to figure you're going to get the best from both sides, are we not?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's exciting. And back in the 80s and 90s when Walter Haas owned the Oakland A's, it was a real rivalry because him being from Walter Haas being from San Francisco and the Haas family, all from San Francisco, you know, they really let you know how important that Bay Bridge Series was. And it was even competitive in spring training when we played the Giants back then. I don't know that it's the same now as it was then, but it was kind of exciting to play them because you knew how much it meant to the Haas family to be successful against them.
Former pitching coach for the Oakland Athletics and St. Louis Cardinals. He's a pitching consultant now with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Four-time World Series champ Dave Duncan with Joe Dibbs, Guru, and Butcher Boy on 95.7 The Game. Dave, we appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for swinging by, and hopefully we can do it again soon.
Yeah, it's fun being on with you guys. Thanks for having me.
Have a good one, Dave. Question for you, trivia question. I was writing about this over the weekend. Since 2012, when MLB expanded to 10 playoff teams, right? 50 teams have gone to the postseason, 5 years times 10. So you've got 50 teams in the postseason. At the trade deadline, how many of those teams already had a playoff spot? Of those 50 teams that have made the playoffs over the last 5 years, how many have had a playoff spot as of the trade deadline?
Of the 50, I would say probably 40 of them. I'd say it's a high number.
You go with 40?
I'm going 40.
I'm saying 27.
Only about half.
Yep.
Get on the fence. Disappointing, but it's an answer.
Yeah. Interesting.
I'm going to roll with Dibs. I'm going to say about 40.
It's literally exactly 40.
Wow.
Exactly 40. Nicely done, boys.
Boys, he gravy trained. Give your own answer, Butcher Boy. Get the hell out of here.
Well, you know what? He picked the right train to get behind.
That's for sure.
The 27, D-train. This guy.
The D train.
This guy, Guru, just assumes everyone's coming out of left field 20 back at the deadline.
It was exactly 40, though.
Exactly 40 of the 50 teams to make the playoffs over the last 5 years have been in playoff contention, have been a playoff team as of the trade deadline. Of the 10 teams that didn't have a playoff spot sewn up, all of them were within four games.
Wow.
So no one's come from further back than four at the deadline since Major League Baseball flipped to 10 playoff teams. That team was St. Louis in, I believe, 2012. Seven of the teams have been within, I think, three games.
That's mind-boggling.
So if you're going to bet on who's going to win the World Series, right now the best thing you can do is look at who's already in play or who is very, very close.
Wow.
Two teams I like, the Yankees sitting at 16-1, about to get Sonny Gray. I'd take that action. And I'd also consider Cleveland. They were sitting out there at about 8-1. They've got the bullpen. They've got the managerial experience. They've got the playoff experience, and they can mash a little bit. It all comes together. Speaking of coming together, Bill King, in the Hall of Fame this weekend. Finally, Ken Korak was there. He'll talk about that next. It's Joe, Dibs, Guru, and Butcher Boy, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Joe, Lowe, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Bradshaw, stay by back. Here comes the rush. He sidesteps. Can he throw? He can't. The ball slipped forward is loose. A wild scramble. 2 seconds on the clock. Castro grabbing the ball. It is ruled a fumble. Castro is recovered in the end zone. The Oakland Raiders have scored on the most zany, unbelievable, absolutely impossible dream of a play.
Oh, Barry's got it.
One on, there's a high drive, hit way back, right center field, that one is gone, and it's 20 consecutive victories for the Oakland Athletics on an unbelievable night when they lost an 11-0 lead, and now they win it. Crazy, just plain crazy.
The sultry sounds of the legendary Bill King, who went into the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown this weekend, boys and girls, this weekend, long, long overdue. To talk about that and more, one of the individuals who is championing the cause for quite some time, the play-by-play voice of your Oakland Athletics, Ken Korak, with Joe, Dibs, Guru, and the Butcher Boy on 95.7 The Game. Ken, take us through it. What was it like in Cooperstown this weekend as Bill King went into the Hall of Fame?
Well, thank you, Joe. And this is really an ensemble of talent that I'm talking to this morning. I'm pretty impressed. It was magical. It was everything that I could have imagined and even then some. I think just beginning with the experience of being in Cooperstown, I'd been there before, but only for a few hours. And as I've said, time stands still in Cooperstown. It's a place where it really is a celebration of the game. And the outpouring of love and respect for Bill, I thought everything came off beautifully. Kathleen's speech was so great, and we had spent a lot of time leading up to that. And I know she was nervous, as you can imagine. I mean, before she delivered the speech, they introduced all the Hall of Famers. They're up there on the stage right behind her. I mean, you got Koufax and Bob Gibson and Tony La Russa and Eck and Ricky and all these people. It would be nerve-wracking, and I thought she did such a marvelous job. And all the other things on the periphery that we were lucky enough to be part of, it was really an incredible time.
It had to be an interesting kind of contrast of emotions, because you, having worked with Bill for so long, you know that he wasn't much at all for pomp and circumstance, yet here is his unbelievable career being honored with full pomp and circumstance. Did you take a moment to kind of reflect on what Bill would be thinking with all this hoopla that he probably didn't want?
Well, yeah, there was a lot of discussion about that and questions, but we came to the conclusion, and Hank Greenwald was there, and so many people going back to Bill's past with the A's, with Sandy Alderson, and Wally Haas came out, and Tony La Russa, like I said, Eck, and we had a wonderful reception for Bill after the ceremony on Saturday. He would have loved it. I think that he would have been deeply moved by the experience, and I think it goes back to Bill's great regard and love for the game. Baseball was his first love. And he made his mark here. I mean, you played the Holy Roller and the Warriors winning the championship in 75. And obviously those were incredible times for him and also for the Bay Area. But Bill had he just treasured the game and its history and its traditions. And I think to be part of all that at Cooperstown and to know that you're almost immortalized through this this incredible honor, that I think it would have been very emotional for Bill. And to be amongst the greats of the game and to see all the Hall of Famers come back, I think it would have been a very moving and humbling experience for him.
Ken, we all know what Bill meant to you. I mean, you wrote a wonderful book, Holy Toledo, Lessons from Bill King. And I was just thinking as I was driving in, when did that idea, talk to us about the origin of that idea. When did you know what, I'm going to go ahead and do this book?
Well, you know, it's a great question. I was approached several years ago by a publisher who wanted me to write my own story. And at the time, I thought, and I kind of still feel this way, but I don't think anybody really cares. But I've always had the thought that I would like to try to write a book. I had a background in journalism when I was in college. And even though it can be intimidating and daunting to think about doing that, I thought, you know, if I was to write something, where is the passion for me? And where is a story that I can tell that I think might have a chance to
maybe move people or grasp people emotionally, and nobody really had written Bill's story. So Steve Kettman, longtime Bay Area sports writer who has a publishing company, Wellstone Books, actually had approached me about maybe an idea of doing a book about Bill. And it was such an inspiring thing for me to do. And one of the reasons everybody I talked to, who I interviewed for the book, was so passionate about talking about Bill. And so the interviews went so great, I just couldn't wait to write after I talked to these people.
Kent, what kind of a person was Bill away from the microphone?
Well, Bill was multifaceted, and he, you know, it's kind of a cliche, but one of the subtitles in the book, Renaissance Man of the Mic, the thing that really characterized Bill was his passion and the way that he immersed himself in everything that he did. I don't know that I've ever met, in fact, I know I've never met anyone who was so immersed in his life like Bill, and he lived every moment to its fullest. He was very gracious. He never sought the spotlight. He certainly never campaigned for an award as august as the Frick Award. He didn't need it to validate who he was, but he was the most fascinating person I've ever met. And as Kathleen said at the end of her speech, people have characterized Bill as the most interesting man in the world. He really was the most interested man because he was so involved. He had this incredible appetite just for learning more about all, and so many different things in life.
The great Ken Korak with Joe, Dibs, Guru, and Butcher Boy on 95.7 The Game. Tough year for both the A's and the Giants, but the Bay Bridge Series will go on. It starts tonight, Game 1 at the Coliseum. You still got to figure that with the A's coming back from their series over the weekend, with the Giants coming back from L.A., these two are going to get up for one another, are they not?
Well, I would think especially if there's a good crowd, and we're certainly expecting a really good crowd at the game tonight, and I think for any series, if there is intensity and emotion in the building, and it actually comes at, I was kind of thinking about this morning, let's face it, these two clubs are having tough years. There's no way to sugarcoat that, but I think when you get together, and now all of a sudden there's this intensity and focus on the series, maybe it comes at a good time for these clubs to have kind of a mini series to play for this week.
And something obviously to keep an eye on ahead of 1 o'clock today would be potential player movement and Sonny Gray at the center of that. How difficult a day is this for not only A's fans, but people like yourself, Ken, members of the organization who get to know these players so intimately?
Well, it is. And I don't know. I don't want to say that I'm jaded from the experience, but we've been through this before. And there's been so much buildup to this. And so we I think, understand that there is the reality here that we're dealing with, that he might be traded today. We don't know that. Now, he's scheduled a pitch tonight for the A's. And as I've said many times before, and I think the A's are playing this great right now, I don't think they've given in to the temptation just to trade Sonny for anybody. So if something were to come down today with the trade of Sonny Gray, I think the A's have made it pretty clear they're going to have to get blown away by the offer because he still has two more years of control. So we'll just have to wait and see how this plays out.
Ken, speaking of Sonny Gray, you've seen him at his best. The Sonny Gray we all see now, how close? What does that gap look like to you?
I think he's very close. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but his last five starts, his ERA is something like 1.5. So he has been very good. He's been dominating again. I think the repertoire is a little bit different. It's taken him a while to get into his starts before you really see that really tough breaking ball, the sharp breaking ball that he can get down in the dirt and get swings and misses on that. He has this changeup that he's developed. It's almost like a two-seam fastball, a little bit like a Felix Hernandez changeup that he throws very hard that he really didn't throw or didn't feature that much earlier. But if he's not the Sonny Gray that we saw when he broke in with the club and dominated and pitched Game 5 of the playoffs for the A's in 13, he's pretty close right now. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
The play-by-play voice of your Oakland Athletics. You can follow him on Twitter at Ken Korak Radio. It's Ken Korak with Joe, Dibs, Guru, and the Butcher Boy on 95.7 The Game. Ken, as always, thank you so much for your time this morning. We greatly appreciate it. Good luck on the call tonight, and hopefully we can do it again very soon.
Thank you. If I could just take a second just to collectively thank everyone and the fans, Bay Area sports fans and fans in general. There's no way I could ever answer all the messages personally. I'm going to try. I just can't. But the outpouring of support and the love that people had for Bill. And so just a collective thank you for everyone who shared in all this in this weekend at Cooperstown with all of us who were there.
I love it, Kenny. So now we're handling you returning your voicemails for you. Any emails you want to get out over the air while we're here, Kenny?
I'll pay you guys a small fee to be like my administrative assistant.
I love it. Use your airtime, Kenny. Right, I love it. Have a good call, Ken.
Okay, thanks, Ken.
Talk to you guys later.
Of course. That's my guy. You got to bust his rocks a little bit, you know. Hey, if you wouldn't mind, Tibbs, I have a cousin listening in Fremont. If I could just wish her a happy birthday and a couple graduation announcements along the way. It's my guy.
Speaking of announcements, Paul Hoynes of the Cleveland Plain Dealer reporting that the Indians are pushing hard for Zach Britton. Zach Britton.
Wow, boys.
Think about that bullpen then.
Jeez.
Miller, Shaw, Allen, Britton. Your starters only need to go, what, four innings?
Tops.
You got to get four innings out of Carrasco, and then you can turn it up. Oh, Carrasco, he's at 40 pitches. Let's turn it over to the bullpen. I just opened my first beer. It's the fourth inning. Oh, my God, man. Cleveland's going after it. I'm telling you, they're sitting there 8-1 right now. That's a strong play. It's a strong play. They're going to win the division. They're not going to have to worry about a wild card game. They've got the playoff experience. They can hit. They've got great starting pitching. I believe starting pitching ERA, top five this season. Now they're going to have a lights out bullpen. That's a team.
Yeah, you would think they would figure, oh, we got enough good relievers, but they're doubling down like the hell. Get as many as we can. This is what's going to get us to the promised land.
They saw it firsthand last year. Miller ran out of gas at the end of the series, which you can't blame him for it. And you saw what Chapman was able to do to him late in that game, even though they were able to come back on a butcher boy. You send Zach Britton to Cleveland, would you make them the favorite in the American League?
I still like the Yankees.
Yeah.
I love the sexy Yankees. I love Aaron Judge. I like what they did picking up Jaime Garcia. And who knows, they might trade for a front-end starter. Maybe it's a Cueto. Maybe it's a Samardzija, a Sonny Gray. I'm hell-bent on seeing a Dodgers-Yankees World Series. I think it'd be really good for baseball.
Where is everyone at on the Houston Astros at this point? I mean, hell of a first half of the season, battling some injuries right now at the moment, but I haven't heard anyone mention them as the team coming out of the AL just yet.
I think the Correa injury is a big one, and I'm very interested to see if he comes back, and when he does come back, is he the same player? Because it hurting the thumb, the hand, I mean, that's very difficult to hit, very difficult to feel, and he's a stud. I mean, absolute stud. I love Springer. I really like the Yankees.
You know who no one should like ever? The Jacksonville Jaguars. Ever. Left tackle Brandon Albert just announced he's retiring. That comes on the heels of a practice over the weekend where Blake Bortles, the quarterback, found a way to throw five interceptions in one practice. Like, imagine being the Jags. There's actually a little hype surrounding you this year. Your quarterback, presumably throwing against nobody, still found a way to throw five interceptions. And then your starting left tackle just decided, I'm done. Thanks, everyone. It's great to be here. Don't forget to tip your waitress.
Bortles, baby Big Ben. Five interceptions in practice, Dibs.
Big Puma said it perfectly about Blake Bortles when he came out of Central Florida. I was in Vegas with him, and he looks at me and goes, Bortles is a 16 in blackjack. That's what Blake Bortles is. And I was like, whatever. You know, he's just crushing the seafood buffet. And he goes, Bortles is a, mark my word, Bortles is a 16 in blackjack. I don't even know what that means, but nicely done. Sure enough, there you go.
Yeah, you can't stand on it, and you can't hit it. All you can do is just shake your head and just push your chips away because it's a lose.
Surrender. Do we have surrender at this table? I surrender this 16.
You stay, you got no shot, and you hit it. What, you're praying for a five? You're praying to go 8-8 and win the division? You got nothing.
All right, we've got an update on Sonny Gray coming up along with $1,000 to give away. That's in 1 minute. Don't go anywhere. Joe Lowe and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.